Hi, Maya Lau here. I just want to say that if you love or even moderately like Other People's Pockets, it would really mean a lot to me if you would leave us a rating or review on your platform of choice. If you're listening to the audio version and you're curious to see the video, find me at It's Maya Money on YouTube. You can also use that same handle, It's Maya Money, to find me on TikTok or Instagram. And all of my socials are also on my website at mayalau.com.
There's two things you should always talk about before you get married or get into a relationship. One is children, and the other is money.
For anyone out there who's thinking of living with someone else, and if that other person does not want to talk about money.
Red flag. Huge red flag. Absolutely 100% red flag, because one of the biggest breakers of a marriage is money.
My guest today is Margot Clayson, founder of the Mighty Microgreen, an organization that helps educators create interactive STEM and nutrition lessons using microgreens. She's also an educator, longtime student, mom, grandmother, wife, and Canadian now living in rural Idaho, who about 10 years ago in her late 50s learned how to budget. I talked to her about the unusual way this financial reckoning came about, how she discovered that she and her husband were in debt, how they got out of it, and what budgeting looks like when you're living off Social Security. I'm Maya Lau, and this is Other People's Pockets, the show where I ask people how much money they make and how their finances work so that the questions we all have about money can be a little bit less of a mystery. And now, here's my interview with Margot Clayson. Margot, welcome to Other People's Pockets.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
How are things looking today in Income, Idaho?
Well, you know, I think you can see a little sunshine on my face here. We have sunshine. It's still 28 degrees, but we have sunshine, so I'm happy.
Nice. And do I see some plants behind you? What are those?
Yeah, those are actually microgreens. So that's what I do in my spare time, is I teach nutrition through microgreens. And I've got a class tomorrow, so I've got a bunch of microgreens ready to bring and let people share.
So wait, tell me more about that. How do you teach nutrition through microgreens?
I am glad you asked. So microgreens, do you know what microgreens are? First, I should ask.
Just small greens, like salad greens?
Close, but okay. So much more. So microgreens, they're tiny plants. You plant them and they go from seed to harvest in 10 days. But here's the great thing, and the reason why I use them for teaching nutrition, is they have up to 40 times more nutrients per ounce than a full-grown vegetable. You know, with children, right, rather than trying to get them to eat a half a cup of broccoli, you can take a little handful of microgreens and mix them in any other food and hide them and
That's
get
amazing.
All the nutrients you need. So that's why I use microgreens. And yes, I teach because teaching is what I love to do.
So let's just back up a little bit to learn more. So you're a small business owner. You've had several different careers. You've also raised children. Now you have grandchildren. Tell me a bit about your journey.
So I grew up in California, although I'm Canadian, but we emigrated to California when I was young. Beautiful place to grow up back in the 60s and 70s. But I met my husband there, and we moved to Idaho. And so now we have a family. We have four children together. And I raised them, of course, as sometimes as homeschooled children when they needed to come out of school, other times in school, and I taught at the same time. And then, of course, they grew up, and I decided to go back to school. I just wanted to learn more. And during this process, I rediscovered microgreens. I had grown microgreens as the kids were growing up. I had grown them just to add to our own food. And that was before they were called microgreens. And before we actually knew how nutritious they were. But in the process of my schooling, I ended up having to start an online business for 3 months. And one of my sons suggested, why don't you do a microgreens? So I started a 3-month-long microgreen process. And guess what? I was the only one in class that actually sold anything.
Wow. And so this really just started as a school project. You didn't have any intention of really running a business.
No, I didn't at all. 100% did not. But, you know, it just snowballed. I started taking them to the local farmers markets and then and did very well. My entire time, every market was teaching people, what are microgreens? Why should you eat them? And then giving them to them. And then one winter, because here in Idaho, you don't grow things outside during the winter, and there's no farmers markets in the winter. So one in the middle of the winter, I had a customer come up to me in a grocery store and said, oh, I miss your microgreens so much. And just without even thinking, I said, well, why don't you grow your own? And then I said, I'll teach you. And so that just kind of snowballed instead of growing them for people, I began to teach people to grow. And that changed my whole focus. To instead of just teaching those that come up to me at the market, to going nationwide and saying, we need to make a change for our youth.
I love that. And so we're here to talk about your personal finances. When did you first become serious about understanding your personal finances?
Well, I'm going to have to say that was only about 10 years ago.
And how old are you?
I am now 68.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So we went a long ways without really focusing on
finances.
It's
never too late.
Exactly. You know what? And that's the whole thing. It isn't too late. But boy, you know what? If I had learned these lessons 40 years ago. So let me tell you, when Ron and I were first married, he was self-employed. He was a concrete contractor. And Ron is... he can build anything. He was doing beautiful work, but his employers were taking advantage of him. And the first year of our marriage, I think it was like 6 months into our marriage, we got audited by the IRS. So, you know, the auditors, they actually, I don't know how they do it now, but back then they came into your home. Well, they came into our 10 by 20 foot trailer that we lived in. We just lived in a camping trailer because, you know, newlyweds and...
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of looked around and then started going through the numbers. And that was the first time we both realized that Ron was not making any money. You know, of course, this is back in the early 80s, but we were maybe bringing in on top of at that point, I was just working in a health food store of all things. Between what I brought in and he brought in, it was probably less than $500 a month.
And how did you not realize that he wasn't bringing in any money?
Because we have all, right from the beginning, we were very frugal.
Mm.
We never had big needs. And we knew we didn't have any money, but it was always, well, we have to wait till the next check comes in from the next. But that check would come in and 90% of it would go to pay off the subcontractors or the concrete or...
expenses, basically.
The expenses, correct. So there was a lot of money going through the account. Literally. I mean, there are thousands of dollars going through the account. And we didn't realize that we weren't pulling it out. Now, fortunately, that was only, you know, a few months into our marriage. But that was
thank you to the auditor.
It really was. It was a good thing. So my husband went into a different career. He decided to go into insurance, and he did very well once he quit being self-employed.
Mm-hmm.
So that was our first issue, really, with money. But here's the thing. We didn't learn our lesson. Even back then when we knew, oh gosh, you know, we could have known this if we had been living on a budget, if we'd been actually tracking money, we would have known that before the auditor got there. But we didn't. And we didn't change that. So fast forward, gosh, 20 years, and we ended up in a very similar situation. Because again, being self-employed. Well, then the recession hit, and all of a sudden his clients, which were mainly large companies, were folding. And we got into big trouble then because we were not tracking our money again. We were not living on a budget. We were frugal again. We've always been frugal. In fact, I asked my kids, what do you remember on that time, about that time money-wise? And their response, and I wrote this down, that they knew that we never had excess money, but they never felt deprived. So, you know, it was, you know, we were just like normal. We just watched our money. But during that recession era, the money ended up gone. We just had a new car. We had, you know, we were renting at that point. I can't remember what other. Oh, we had no health insurance at that point. We ended up in a bankruptcy.
Huh.
And then here's the thing again. We still did not learn. We didn't learn the lessons again. We still did not live on a budget. Again, we were frugal. We don't go out to dinner. We don't go on expensive vacations. You know, we don't buy expensive cars. You know, we shop at thrift stores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also you have kids and life keeps going and you don't really have time to sit down and reflect on things.
Yeah, yeah. As long as needs are met, and that's the thing is, our needs have always been met. Not our wants, but our needs.
Mm-hmm.
So we've never really been concerned about it.
What is it like to come out of bankruptcy?
It was actually a big relief. At that point, we were, I don't even remember the numbers, but we were deep enough in debt that I was getting phone calls on a daily basis from creditors. And oh my goodness, that is so, I had never been called by a creditor. I had no idea we had so many creditors.
Mm-hmm.
So the bankruptcy itself was a relief, but it was also an embarrassment. You know, the fact that we had gotten into that situation. And that is when I started going back to work again, even though my kids were fairly young, but they were in school. So I just worked during their school hours. And that really helped. So that changed our lifestyle a little bit. But as far as finances go, we didn't make too many changes because, again, there was not a whole lot going out that didn't need to.
And then was there a moment when you did look at the numbers and go, okay, I'm actually going to track the spreadsheet now. I'm going to get a handle on my finances. How did that happen?
That's a very good question. I'm a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and our church is very invested in education. I had the opportunity to test out a fairly new program called Pathways. And one thing they began was a program that you could basically relearn how to go to school. Each semester was a different class. So about the third semester, it was a math class. And I'll tell you, I was dreading math because math has never been my priority or my strong point. But it turns out that the math class, what they called a math class, was actually a personal finance class.
I love that idea. That's so smart for a math class. So many more people would be interested
amazing.
In math.
Yep. Because you see the reason for math.
And it's more personal. It's like your money.
Yep. And that was exactly it. It was our money. So one of the very first things we had to do was fill out a form that listed every penny we owned, every debt we had, every piece of collateral, everything, so that we truly understood our financial situation. Well, this was a moment of truth.
And had you ever done that before?
Never. I really didn't worry about the money. If the money was in the account, then I used what I needed, mm-hmm. and there was always left over. What I didn't know was our debts were not coming out of that money that we had. And because my husband, again, was still self-employed, we had gone into debt. And I didn't know because I was not invested. And it wasn't that it was hidden. I mean, I was on all the accounts, but I wasn't interested enough to see where the money was going or coming from. And that's the key right there, is where was the money coming from? Going through everything as a result of this class, I realized we were $40,000 in debt. Now, I have to tell you that our home, we were only $8,000 away from paying off our house. So we were doing pretty, house payment was very low. It was like $600 a month. But to find out that we were deeply in debt that I had no idea, absolutely zero idea. Was that my husband's fault? No, he never hid anything. But I was never interested enough to find out what was going on financially.
Did your husband know that you guys were in debt?
Oh, yeah, he did.
And so he's like, this is not a surprise to me.
Well, he knew. Yeah, he knew. But it also explained a lot that we had never communicated enough to say, why are you working so much? I was raising my kids as a single parent because he was always working. Always. I mean, it was.
And he was constantly trying to pay off the debt with that extra work?
Yes. He was just working as hard as he could and, you know, doing the best he could, but it wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. Not with, you know, when the recession hit.
What was the debt from?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know. I know it had to have been living expenses. I'm going to have to say, I don't know.
I mean, that's it can add up. It can add up quickly. Just putting things on a credit card. Yeah.
A few hundred dollars a month, you know, needed extra to pay insurance. Oh, insurance was one of the things. You know, you have house insurance and health insurance and car insurance. And then we had teenagers, so we had more car insurance. We had to get another car. That's right. We had to get another car because of the teenagers. We live way out of town. So, and all we had were
having
used
teenagers
vehicles.
Sounds scary and expensive. I have a 6-year-old, so I'm not ready.
You're not ready. You will be. You will be. They are wonderful. Teenagers are absolutely wonderful, but they come with challenges. And
what's the saying? Little kids, little problems. Big kids, big problems.
Yes.
And I just can't right now. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You have this reckoning. You realize that you're tens of thousands of dollars in debt. What do you do then?
I throw a holy terror fit.
Toward yourself, toward the situation, toward your husband.
I'm terrible. It was towards my husband. Yeah. And that was, you know, and that's the thing is, at the time, I blamed him. When there was no blame, it was not his. He was doing his darndest. We came up with a plan because I realized my responsibility, and that was part of the class, is helping us realize our responsibility in personal finances. I believe we talked to an accountant, actually, at that point. And what we ended up doing was put a second on our house.
So a second mortgage?
A mortgage, yeah, which was absolutely heartbreaking because we were only a year and a half away from paying off our house that we'd been paying on for 30 years.
And so by taking out a second mortgage, you could pay off the credit card debt, but then you have the mortgage on the house. And I'm guessing, is the idea behind that the interest rate would be lower on the mortgage?
Yes.
So overall, it would be an easier way to get out of that debt?
Yes. Yeah, because part of our debt was in credit cards. And as you know, credit cards are absolutely the worst unless you pay them off every month. Some of them were 15, 20% interest. So we were paying megabucks in interest. But what we did is we took all the debts, paid it off. We had one payment, and we were very fortunate because at that time the interest rates were fairly low. And here's the other thing. By doing that, we had one payment. There was nothing to get missed. Mm-hmm. There is no weaseling out, yes, we have money, without paying something off. There was one payment. And as part of that, all accounts were closed. Everything was closed.
Everything extraneous, all the hidden places.
Yes.
But did you have a coming together with your husband to say, look, I know that, we didn't keep track of this and we both played our role in letting this happen, but I need you to be more open. If you know about an account that I don't know about or that I seem to not be paying attention to, can we please communicate more? Because it sounds like he kind of knew and, he wasn't trying to hurt anyone, but I would be mad too. Like, I just need you to just tell me, because eventually this is going to come out.
And I want to reiterate, he was not hiding it.
Yeah, he wasn't hiding it, but he wasn't saying, hey, let's have a family meeting. Let's talk about this.
Exactly. And yes, that was the beginning of our learning how to budget. So one of the first things we did is, if anybody spends more than $50 on anything, we talk about it first. And, at the end of the month, we talk about what we've done. So there wasn't any, I think I'm going to buy a new horse.
Well, I hope not. I don't even know how much a horse costs, but that sounds like a impulse buy.
That was a big problem. Yeah. And see,
did you impulse buy a horse?
I did. I bought
a
horse.
How much was that? When was that?
And well,
you didn't talk about it?
No, we didn't. We didn't talk about it. I know. See, this is important because this is not just one person.
Yeah, no,
in a marriage, it's two people.
Yeah.
So when I was homeschooling my kids, my daughter wanted to learn to ride. So I had a friend who had a horse and he was okay with giving it away. So I took the horse.
How much was it?
And then it was free. He just gave it to me.
So you didn't spend money on it?
Well.
Oh, the accessories and the...
The accessories,
upkeep, right.
The hay. But here's the other problem. The horse was way too much for my daughter. So I had to buy another horse. And that one was not free. I think that one was about $800. And then my son wanted to ride. So we needed three horses. And so we bought this lovely Arabian for him.
Wait, so where does a horse live and how much, say, a month does it take to house the horse, feed it, keep it maintained, any equipment you need? I mean, what does it cost per month to have a horse?
For us, it wasn't that much. Other than my husband, bless his heart, had to build a good sized shed for them because, of course, they need a shed. Then he needed a shed. Then we needed a shed for the hay, but we live up on an area where they could eat all through the summer. And we live up and we've got lots of acreage. So other than we had to buy a fence, of course, So
how much do fences cost?
You know what? It probably was $300 or $400.
That's not that much for a huge fence.
No, it wasn't. We went, as I said, we went the least expensive route, but when you don't realize you're in debt.
And you're putting it on a credit card or.
No, we paid cash. Because at that point I was teaching. So it just came out of my paycheck. But that paycheck that then couldn't go to pay off bills. So that's where, and the horses, two horses that I actually purchased and saddles to go along with them. All that came out of my paycheck. So I didn't realize that my paycheck was actually necessary to pay off bills. So instead of putting that into the pot, I said, I've got money, and went and bought my daughter a horse, went and bought my son a horse, went and bought, reasonable saddles and bridles and brushes. And then, of course, you have to pay for the farriers every couple of months. And
what's a farrier?
To put shoes on them.
Mm-hmm.
So during the summer, when you're riding, they need to have shoes because we live up in a very rocky area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was not cheap.
Yeah,
and of course the hay. And back then, the hay was very inexpensive. I was getting hay for I can't even remember like $50 a ton. It's now two and three times that.
Why?
Or more, because of drought, for one thing. And then just the prices of gas, farming. Farming has just, oh my goodness, farmers are hurting. Let's just say that. I live in farming community, so farmers are hurting even more now with all the tariffs and stuff.
And just to situate where you are, so how far away are you from Boise?
I'm about a five-hour drive.
Okay. And what about from Salt Lake City?
2.5 hours.
Okay. Is Salt Lake City your closest big city?
Big city, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So basically, if you drive south 2 hours, you'll get to Salt Lake City. And then if you drive west 5 hours, you'll get to Boise, Idaho.
Northwest, yeah.
Northwest. Okay. Got it. Yeah. All right. Wait, just going back to this personal finance math class, what else did you learn? What did you, did they teach you like a method for tracking finances or what else came out of that?
They taught us the basics of budgeting. So after finding out what we had, then we were encouraged and taught how to keep track. And we were encouraged to figure out what was needed and what was not. The difference between needs and wants. Sometimes wants masquerade as needs. So if I say, I need a new pair of shoes. For example, yesterday I decided to go back to the gym after years away. Realized
yesterday you did.
Yesterday.
I love that.
Yeah, it was a little embarrassing looking around and realizing it's been 10 years and I don't even know where to start. But, you know, as part of that, going back to the gym, I needed a pair of shoes because I had no gym shoes. My first thought was go to Fred Meyer's. Fred Meyer's here. That is the most upscale place that we have here, which is a very small town. So it's and there were very nice shoes. They're, you know, probably starting at about $45 for a pair. And it briefly crossed my mind that, you know, they'll last me a long time. But it wasn't in the budget. So it went immediately from a need to a want. Because I knew that I could get what I needed cheaper. So I actually went to a thrift store. And lo and behold, they have had these beautiful leather sneakers, not even used, for $4.
In your size.
So there. In my size. Yeah. So that's what I ended up getting.
Yeah. And for me, this is always a struggle because I also believe that time is money. And so I might have been like, you know what? I don't want to go on the other side of town. I don't want to sift through a bunch of shoes that aren't, you know, high quality, or maybe they aren't going to have my size or whatever the issue is. I don't have time to do it because I have a doctor's appointment. And so then I might be left with no shoes. And then I can't go to the gym, which is important for my health and is one of the best money and time investments you can make because your health is so expensive if it goes wrong. So yeah. My mind would go to like, is my time worth the extra $20? Mm-hmm. And I might say, yeah, I want to just get this done and move on. So how do you kind of make those decisions?
Decision. Well, you know, a lot of it is, do I have it? Does it fit in the budget? You know what? If I have $200 in my budget for this week or this month, and I'm not going to use it on there's nowhere where it needs to go. I've got that extra $20. Then yeah, I'm going to use it because it's okay. But if I don't have it in my budget and I'm taking it from somewhere else, then it becomes the want and not the need.
Mm-hmm.
So saving time for you, saving time might be a little different than for me. You know, I don't have a 6-year-old at home. I don't have the same time constraints that you do. Yes, I'm running a business. And I have other responsibilities, but I'm a little more in control of my time.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. The month of March is when we celebrate International Women's Day. And it's had me thinking about the strong women in my life, particularly my mom, but also mother figures everywhere, and that specific kind of love that mostly goes unseen. My daughter's actually sick with a cold right now, and last night I was up again and again with her, getting more medicine and trying to calm her down so she could sleep. Just being there. And I realized this is what my mom did for me, what both my parents did, awake on a random Tuesday night, rearranging work on a Wednesday so that I could stay home from school. This is the kind of care you don't remember because you were half asleep for it, or just being a kid. And whether you're a mom or you have a mom or someone showed up for you in that way, that steady, quiet presence, it's a reminder that taking care of people is real work, emotional work, mental work, the kind that deserves support. Therapy can be a great way to find the support you need. BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, with more than 12 years of experience matching millions of people with licensed therapists. You can specify your needs and preferences for what kind of therapist you want, who has the experience in whatever you're struggling with, and BetterHelp will pair you with the right person. If you aren't happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist at any time. Your emotional well-being matters. Find support and feel lighter in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. So how do you figure out your budget now? Is everything just a system that works, or are there still times when you're making tough decisions?
We are still making tough decisions, and I'm going to have to say it changed again. Our finances changed again. So the way we've been doing it, the way we've been budgeting for the last, I can't remember whether it's 8 or 10 years, but number of years, has been working very well. We are not in debt. Other than the house, we had no debts. And we made it a point to never get into debt. So it was working, and we never felt deprived. We, you know, went down to Florida to visit our kids. We buy treats for our grandchildren, go out to dinner once a week. So, money has not been an issue because we've been frugal, but we've been happy with the way things have turned out. But then 4 months ago, my husband made a very important decision. Now, he's over 70. He decided it was time to retire, and I 100% supported him. And my immediate feeling was, yes, that's right. We hadn't talked about it at all, hadn't even come up in conversation, but both of us felt that inspiration that it was the right time.
Well, so now that you're approaching 70, your husband is over 70, he retired, what is different now about your family finances?
We are still working on the details, let me say. We have what's called Rocket Money on our phones. So Rocket Money is an app that keeps track of all of your accounts. And anytime you can label everything as to where what budget it's coming out of. So everything we spend now is labeled, so we know where money is coming from. And then the second important part is we got out the old spreadsheet, figured exactly how much money we're going to have now. I mean, we have a pretty good savings. We have a 401k, but we don't want to use those because we are older. What if something happens medically? What if a car breaks down? We now have no money for that. We have no budget to get sick and no budget to buy a new car. So that, if something happens, has to come out of the savings that we have built up over the last 10 years.
So where does your money come from just to go to the grocery store, just daily living?
Social Security. We are strictly living off of Social Security now because neither my husband or I have a pension. And we've both paid into Social Security all of our lives, both of us from the time we were 15. Because I didn't work when the children were young, I did not build up nearly as many credits as he did because he never stopped working. We have no income. I'm going to say very little income because we do have my business. But my business is more of a, I really should run it as a as a nonprofit.
Because there is none a profit.
Exactly.
So Social Security, can you say like roughly how much you get from Social Security a month?
I think it's like about $1,500 total.
Mm-hmm. For the family.
Yeah.
And does that amount feel comfortable?
Doable. It is. Let's say it is it is doable. Is it comfortable? Not necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what we've decided is we went through everything. We use propane. Now, propane, you only fill, we've got a 500-gallon tank. So we only fill that tank a couple of times a year, but you have to save money in order to fill that tank.
It's a big purchase.
It's
is that to heat your house, to cook for everything?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just to heat the house.
Just to heat.
Yeah, we're on electricity for everything else. It's just for heating. You know, we're able to stretch that tank for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned you use this app and it tracks every expense.
Yeah.
Does that mean you don't use cash? Because otherwise it wouldn't go through the app?
Right. Well, it will go through the app because if we withdraw money from an account, that is also mm-hmm. shown. But we don't use cash other than if we, like, one of the things we're trying to do is to, we've lived in this spot here for 35 years now, and you can imagine the stuff we have gained. And so we're eliminating stuff. We put it on Facebook Marketplace and sell it off.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a pump we sold off and a treadmill and all sorts of stuff. And mm-hmm. so that we get in cash. And so that we use for things like pigeon feed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so most purchases are with a debit card or do you use credit cards?
We use debit cards. So this has been a bit of a bone of contention with my husband that we're working on. He prefers to use the credit card and pay it off each month. He prefers to do that for certain expenses, such as we have to finish the basement. And so all those he put on the credit card because for him, it's easier to keep track of. I am uncomfortable with that because what if something happens and we can't pay that off at the end of the month? That I don't like. So we're still negotiating on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else comes out of one of four accounts. So I have my own personal account. He has his own personal account. And we're on both accounts. So it's not like they're not hidden accounts. And it's all accounted in Rocket Money. Every account is in Rocket Money. But it just helps us to keep track of, okay, yes, I can pay $4 for a pair of shoes. And we put $200 each month, beginning of the month, we put $200 into there. And that's our...
Into where?
Into our personal accounts.
Personal. Each.
So... Yeah, so he has
$200.
I have $200. And yesterday my grandson sent me a little fundraiser link. And so I could go in there and hit, yes, of course I'm going to support my grandson and, you know, put $20 in there. And that came out of my personal account.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to buy, you know, get my violin bow rehaired. That came out of my personal account. So anything that is strictly for me or optional comes out of my account. For Ron, he likes to go and have a hamburger once in a while. So that comes out of that his $200. So that's an easy way of basically making it not feel like we're having to account for every penny mm-hmm. to each other.
What
but
are
everything
the other
else,
accounts?
We have what we call the main account, and that's where gas and food and
like shared expenses.
All the household expenses, yeah. Everything comes out of there. Now, then we have a fourth account where things like the propane and electricity and insurance comes from. Because those are bills that are not regular. They're not exactly the same every month, and they don't come every month. Like for the garbage pickup, that's once every 3 months. The electricity, it could be $165 this month, and it might be $110 next month, or it might be $70 in the summer. So we have a separate account that we put a certain amount in. We've kind of averaged up all those amounts and figured out, okay, divided by 12, this is how much has to go into that account every month. And hopefully that account is full enough by the time those bills came in, because we just started this. So, but everything is working out so far, so good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so we basically have those four accounts. Oh, and then we have a savings account.
That you're putting account. Money into continually, or that it's just...
That is something that we actually are having to figure out, because right now there isn't enough money to refill the savings account on what we're making. By the time we pay for the propane and the electricity and the life insurance and the health insurance and, you know, and electricity and the gas, because we live a long ways out of town, there isn't much left over to put back into savings. But we're still at the beginning stages of this budget, because it's a work in progress. We have a certain amount. Like Ron has, I think we decided $200 for him for gas per month. For me, $100 a month, because I have a hybrid. But it looks like I'm not spending $100 a month, and he's not spending $200 a month on gas. So rather than say, okay, that means that we can have extra in our personal accounts, no. If there's extra, it's going in back into savings. Same with our food budget. I think our food budget is about $375. If we don't spend that, then back into the savings.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons, you know, and you can look at that at $375, that's actually not very much for food for two people.
What does enough look like to you?
Enough means that we don't worry. Enough means no fear, no worry, and enough to share. And that's where I feel we're at. We have enough, if we're careful, and we can still share with our grandson. I have a personal vow that I will never pass a children's lemonade stand without stopping and supporting them. You know, being an entrepreneur.
That would just be cruel. Yeah.
It would be.
Heartless.
It would be. Now, I don't always drink that lemonade. It,
oh.
You know, I'll drive a half a mile and dump it out the window. So I shouldn't admit that.
Oh my gosh. Everyone's going to hear this and know that you do.
Children, don't
listen. Oh, the children
listen.
Are listening.
But I always give them a tip too. So, you know, that makes them feel better.
Margo, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for talking to me.
You're very welcome. My hope is that someone will hear and realize how important budgeting is and how important it is for a husband and a wife or partners or whoever you are living in the same community, that you're together, that you understand finances, and that you're together on them. And the best place to begin is before you become a community or a family.
How would you suggest having that initial conversation before you actually become a community?
Get with an accountant and talk to them if you don't already know how to budget, or find a trusted friend that you know does know how to budget.
So, final question for anyone out there who's thinking of living with someone else or joining up with them, and if that other person does not want to talk about money, is that a red flag?
Red flag. Huge red flag. Absolutely 100% red flag, because one of the biggest breakers of a marriage is money. And you can love somebody to pieces, but if arguments start because somebody is spending money that we don't have, and it's ongoing, and then we get division, and then we get disrespect, and then we get anger, it will ruin a relationship. So there's two things you should always talk about before you get married or get into a relationship, one is children and the other is money.
Well, on that note, I think that's a great place to end. Margo Clayson, thank you so much for being here. I really have had a lot of fun talking to you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Other People's Pockets is written, hosted, and executive produced by me, Maya Lau. Kristen Torres edited this episode and provided booking and research. Thank you to Pushkin Industries for past production support. Please follow or subscribe to Other People's Pockets on your platform of choice. Check out the video version on YouTube and email me with guest ideas, questions, or suggestions at otherpeoplespockets@gmail.com. See you next time.